Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Okay, so our church was going through a transition to a new pastor. And the pastor hired a consulting agency.
Yeah.
And it was known by the leadership team, but it wasn't known by the rest of the church.
Oh, I see. So they were like secret shoppers.
Exactly.
They
brought people in to just kind of go through the church and what was the experience like? It was interesting, the report that they came back with. I'm surprised anybody ever came back to church after the report, because we apparently were horrible. Anyway, this is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
There's Dan Hirsch right here.
And there's Kyle Bierman. And today we're talking about, what do consultants discover about your church or churches in general?
Yeah.
And they tend to find several things. Now, Chuck Lawless has kind of compiled some of these.
Yes.
And he's got eight that people discover in church.
So we'll look at eight insights from church consultants and see if these match your church. But you probably don't think they do because you're not aware of it.
Right.
That's why you have to have a church consultant come in and tell you. Right. And by the way, Mark Halleck is on sabbatical.
Yeah.
And we miss Halleck when he's not here.
Lucky guy.
Yeah. I don't know what sabbatical is.
I can't even spell it.
I've never been on one. I don't know.
I think it's like Saturday or something, isn't it?
I think it's a Sabbath. I don't know.
Let's talk about these things that church consultants discover when they're doing their secret shopping and they come to your church.
Number one. What is it? I don't know where that came from.
Those are your old days.
My old radio days. Yeah. It's true.
Church websites are often outdated.
That's why I don't have that job anymore, by the way.
Well, I mean, you haven't been in radio unless you've been fired. I mean, that's just true. The bottom
line. All right, go ahead.
Church websites are often outdated, boring, and useless.
Oh, I know. Can I tell you guys how many times, even this week, I went to a church website of a large church. We're talking more than 200 in average attendance. And to me, that's large. I couldn't find the service times until I clicked on the little what's that thing at the top?
Oh, yeah.
The little three dots or whatever.
The three dots or three slashes, whatever that thing is. What do they call that thing? I don't know.
Like a menu. Yeah,
I couldn't find the service times till I clicked on the menu. Why you don't have the service time on the opening page of your website?
But I'll bet you could find the give online button.
Probably. Probably.
So three things that need to be easily findable. Your service times, address, phone number, contact information, and your church staff. Who people are looking for.
I have to go two or three pages in to find the pastor's name.
And I had one. So when we do consultations and I'm on the phone with somebody, I usually go to their church website because I want to know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
I had one this last week. I could not find a phone number for them.
Yeah.
It didn't show up in a Google search. It didn't show up on their website. There was no way to contact that church. Listen, your church website does not have to be flashy, but it needs to be accessible. And
And you have to decide who's the website for.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if the website's just for your people, then you don't really even need the website.
Exactly.
So you're trying to reach people who are looking, they're searching, they want to know something.
And outdated. Oh my goodness. I go to so many websites and they've got little icons or little clip art stuff on there from the 1990s.
I was thinking like they're still inviting you to Easter 2024.
Yeah, that's true too.
I've seen those too, man.
Church websites, outdated, boring, and useless.
By the way, we have a church right here. I'm not going to mention the name of the church, but the church still has the associate pastor and the music director on the website, and they've been gone for months.
Oh, no.
You're still on there. All right. Number two. When they come in, do they secret shop your church? Sometimes they find out that just churches are just not friendly.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
Everybody leaves it to somebody else to be friendly.
I know. Kyle and I were talking about this. Go for it. Go for it, Bierman.
So if you ask any church, most of them will say, yes, we are friendly. what that means is they are friendly to one another. Mm-hmm. They're friendly to the people they know.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, our pastor went on one of those sabbatical things, and he visited several churches around our city. And he came back saying, I mean, churches, mega churches down to churches with 100 people. And he said, across the board, people didn't greet him when he walked in.
Wow.
There was no, like, can we help you find a small group? Can we help you find a place to sit? Like, it was just, he felt like he was ignored. And these were in what we would say are some thriving churches. They weren't friendly. So listen, this is something we are not good at as a church culture.
And Stetzer would always say, people aren't looking for a friendly church. They're looking for friends in church.
Oh, good point.
And so friendly church is, hi, we're glad you're here. And then they don't say anything to you the rest of the time you're there.
Yeah, but you know, we're a friendly church because we greet each other during the service.
That's true.
You know,
we don't. Or we ask our visitors to stand up in the middle of the service and be recognized. Yeah.
So anyway, it is an issue where you've got to be intentional about friendliness. Number three, the church facilities are not well marked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And you know what? The more normative size the church, the more that's true. Now, you go to a big mega church, they're probably going to say restrooms down here, children's area there. Mm-hmm. But you go to just a regular normal size church, you don't have to know where the bathrooms are. You don't know where the kids' rooms are. People walk in, many people, when they walk into your sanctuary, it's just a relief, poor choice of words, for them to be able to know where the restroom is.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know, because, you know, you might have to go, right?
Yeah.
And what door, I mean, seriously, you think about that. A brand new person, they might have a child there that needs to go to the bathroom or maybe something. And do I go out the back door, the side door, the front door? Where do I go? I mean, there's, and again, where do I take my children? You ought to look at every door in your church, and you ought to look through it the eyes of a first-time guest to say, where's the sanctuary, where are the restrooms, where's the children's area?
Yeah.
You can't have too much signage for that.
We had I was in a church where this people were visiting, and one of the people that was visiting got up and went out the side door, and just a few seconds later, they opened the door that was just to the right of the stage, walked in, turned around, walked out. A few seconds later, they came to the other side of the stage, opened that door, turned around, walked out, then came to the door on the opposite side of where they left. They never did find the restroom, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need signs. You need well-marked signs.
You need well-marked signs. Number four, churches aren't prepared for guests. Sometimes there's no guest parking. Other times there's no welcome center or a place that's marked for first-time guests. Now, you know, here's the deal about parking. When I was at Warnell, the first Sunday I was there, you know, it goes down in history now. We had 18. I say that all the time, but we did. And the sanctuary that seated 600 and you know, our parking lot was not huge. It had like 72 spaces. So you're not, I don't know how they got 600 people in there with 72 spaces. But certainly the first few years I was there, we didn't use more than 20 of those 72 spaces. But I still went out and had really nice signs made with really good graphics and put right up the front that said guest parking. It wasn't because we didn't have enough parking spaces. It's because I wanted guests to know that we expected them. We were prepared for them.
Did you get any pushback from folks who, you know, you took their parking space away?
No, not really. Okay. I could have, right. I guess. But I think even just to have that, even if you don't have a lot of guests, at least if someone shows up for the first time, they go, oh, this is where we're supposed to park. Yep. Oh, they actually, and I don't put visitor. That's just my opinion. A visitor is someone who drops in. A guest is someone that you invite. So, you know, mm-hmm. I put guest parking, and there needs to be a little table somewhere when you first walk in that says guest reception, and there you got some information about your church, some gift you're going to give them, just so it looks like you're prepared for them.
Yeah.
If you don't have any of that, people walk in and they're like, oh, you're here for the first time? It's like, oh, that surprises us. Yeah. So churches are not well prepared for guests.
And I was talking with a pastor one time who had done a secret shopper thing on a church that he was had sent a resume to.
Really?
They didn't know who he was.
Oh, that would be interesting.
But he did it. And he walked in with his kids, and it was very clear they were not prepared for children. They hadn't had children in a long time.
Yeah.
They had to go ask a lady to go to the nursery. They were like turning lights on, unlocking doors to get into the nursery. So, like, listen, if you're not prepared for guests, you're probably not going to have guests, right? But it's an amazing thing if you're prepared for them, the way the Lord blesses that, and suddenly you see them.
And he says here, number five, churches are poorly equipped for having children and protecting children. You know, if you have children with you, man, and you walk in there and it's like you just said, well, they can go in here, or I think Karen can watch the kids today. Yeah. Well, who's Karen? And has she been background checked? And we live in a day and age, guys, where every child worker needs to be background checked. You need to have at least two people in every room. You need to have a window in every door, preferably a camera in every room, and check them in with a number. I know you may have a really normative-sized church with almost no children, but be ready with all of that, because if they show up with kids and it looks like it's not a safe place, they're not going to come back.
Yes. Yeah.
Number six.
Worship through music often needs improvement.
I find that hard to believe. I find that hard to believe. And, you know, we're not just... I think many times... normative-sized churches, you try to do music similar to the large church, and it is so painful because you don't have the worship band. If you would just do worship the way you can do worship, if you have a good pianist. I'm an interim pastor now of a rural church outside of St. Joseph out in the country, and I have a really good pianist. She was like a school teacher, and she can play the piano really well. And we sing very familiar songs. Last Sunday morning, we had the men's ensemble. We had seven or eight men. That's basically all the men in church. They get up on the platform. They're holding their hymnals, all right? And they're going to lead us in singing. And the first song we sang was Leaning on the Everlasting Arms. Now, some of you would think that's kind of hokey. But you know what? If you were a visitor and you walked into that church and you saw seven grown men singing that song loudly and everybody singing together, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's better than something that's trying to be trendy and can't be in other words, when we say music that's lame, we mean music that nobody's singing. That's what we mean.
Well, music that's not done well.
Not done well.
Yeah.
And that's what he says here, regardless of style.
Yeah.
He says, here's the key things. He says it needs improvement. Musicians have not practiced.
Yes.
Lyrics are difficult to sing.
Yes.
And leaders lack passion.
There you go.
You can fix all of those. You can sing hymns.
Yes.
And have passion.
Yes.
And have practice.
Exactly.
You can sing contemporary and have practiced and have leaders that have passion.
Yeah.
This isn't rocket science.
Right.
You know, what I do where I am now is we use the recorded music with lyrics, videos.
Right.
Basically. And I want to make sure that music is done right, you know, and I don't want to put something hokey up there. I want music that sounds good because your congregation wants to sing to music that sounds good.
Yes.
And it's not music that you like. It's music that is done right.
Yep.
That's the key.
Yes. And if you need help with this, we have free resources at replanthub.com.
Yeah.
There are other online music services that can get you good worship music. If you just don't have musicians or singers, there are options out there to do this and do it well.
The one thing you want to make sure that you don't do is go to YouTube and download it and start playing that stuff.
Don't do it illegally. You know, don't break the law.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
So here are, again, we're going to reiterate these a little bit. Insights from some church guests. Sometimes your websites are boring and useless. Your churches are really not as friendly as you think they are. Your facility is not well marked. You're not really prepared for guests. You have a poorly equipped children's area, and your worship music often needs to be improved. Does that sound like your church?
Why did you look at me when you said that?
I don't know. I just did. No, I'm going to look at you on this one. Number seven, the preaching is often weak.
The preaching is often weak.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. This is really tough for most of us who are listening to this right now who are involved in this because, you know, well, first of all, I'm not a pulpiteer. I've never claimed to be. You are.
I'm a puppeteer.
You are a pulpiteer. You're a better pulpiteer than you were puppeteer.
Have you ever been a puppeteer in the pulpit?
I've been a puppeteer in the pulpit.
A puppeteer in the pulpit.
Listen, he had his own trailer hauling.
Oh, I did.
Hauling puppets around.
I did.
Going in puppet ministry.
I was.
You and Gary?
Me and Gary Clark.
Oh, my Lord.
And the Maranatha puppet ministry. Because everybody was using the word Maranatha then. Just like everybody uses the word gospel now. Everything was Maranatha back then, in the 70s.
It was
the Maranatha.
It was special.
Of course, you and I had ASAF Productions.
Well, we did have ASAF Productions. It never did anything.
It never did anything. No, that was the damn night.
We had great paperwork and
we had,
you know,
we had
flyers.
Business cards.
Yeah, we had business
cards. I
was
the president of ASAF Productions.
Yeah, man, we were set up right. Just didn't go anywhere.
If you would like to contact us, you can contact us at ASAP Productions. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So,
what are we talking about?
Well, preaching is
weak.
Is
preaching.
Often weak. You know,
weak
and secret shoppers have noticed that the preaching is weak. Let me tell you, if your preaching is weak, it's no wonder people aren't coming.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. And you say, well, I'm just not that great of a preacher. You're good at some things.
Yeah.
You know, find the things that you're good at and then strengthen the areas that you're not good
Brother,
at.
Brother, you never quit learning to be a better preacher.
Exactly.
So here's what you need to do. Everybody records himself these days. I mean, everybody. And if you don't, then do it anyway. Record yourself. Video record yourself. And force yourself to watch yourself preach. You've got to watch yourself, I believe, in order to get better. You learn from that. Have some men that you trust watch it as with you and or as for you, and then have them autopsy your sermon and find ways you can work at getting better. If you preach from manuscript, that's fine. If you preach extemporaneously, that's fine. But however you preach, find ways to improve that preaching moment. Spurgeon's book, go ahead and put it in the show notes, Lectures to My Students. Yeah. He even talks about hand gestures and motions and all those. It's very practical and still very good stuff. Man, work on your preaching. Don't just assume you can't get better. You can get better and work at getting better.
Here's a little hack, too. You can go one of those sites that has sermons already online, mm-hmm. you know, and you can download the sermons and everything. And they all have stars on them, like 5 stars, 3 stars, 2 stars, 1 star.
I was wondering where that was going there.
And go check the 1 and 2 star ones and see how they compare to your preaching.
That's right. Go to the lowest ones.
But this is
see.
Important. What he says here too. He says, so not just weak in style, but he says too many preachers neglect the Bible, misuse it, or quickly depart from it in preaching. This man. Others somehow take the gospel and make it boring.
How do you do that?
You make because you lecture it.
Yeah.
Remember, Martin Lloyd-Jones says, preaching is logic on fire.
Logic on fire.
Mm-hmm. You can have logic, but no fire. Yeah. You can have fire, but no logic.
Yep.
So it's logic on fire. And sometimes guys out of seminary, they lecture it. They've put 20 hours into this sermon. They've looked in 15 commentaries, and they've looked at all the word searches on Logos, and they're going to get all that in their sermon no matter what. And they don't realize that 90% of the people sitting out there have not even opened their Bible that week, and they don't know where Hezekiah is anyway.
Right.
And so you got to preach Jesus, preach the gospel. You got to we could do a whole thing on preaching, and I would like to. So good enough. All right.
One more.
Go ahead.
And that is that churches are not always clear in what to do in response to worship.
I know. So many times you'll get through worship service and my benediction is, but then what again do I know? That's how I end every service. No. No, not really. I'm sorry. That was bad. Actually, I read Martin Lloyd-Jones's benediction about every Sunday now. It's a great benediction he read every Sunday in his church. But that's not what we're talking about. It's not just the benediction, which I think is important. That's another sermon for another day. I think the way you end the service means something, too. I don't think you just want to, like, well, okay, that's about it. You all drive safe. I mean, I think there needs to be...
Fasten your seatbelts.
There needs to be a strong ending as there is a beginning. Yeah. But what he's talking about here is we've worshiped. We've come to a point of experiencing God today. We've heard a sermon. How do I take this week and use it in my life?
Yeah, the application.
What are some specific things? Are there things I can do this week, today even, that relate to what I learned today? And think about that when you're preaching, when you're doing your worship service. You're giving people something to take with them that they can respond to.
Everything you do in your worship service, the singing, the scripture reading, the praying, the preaching, everything you do needs to have an application.
That's right.
And if you stop the service right in the very middle, the people should be able to walk away with something that they can apply in their lives already.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked in an earlier podcast about sleepwalking through church.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't give people something to do in response to what they've heard, that encourages the sleepwalking through church. We're just going through the motions. We don't expect to get anything out of it. We'll just be here again next week, which is kind of like this podcast. We'll be here again
what,
next
why
week.
Why do you say that? Because then I've got to follow up and say, this is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
Yeah, we'll be here again next week.
Whether you're looking for us or not, we'll
whether
be
you
here.
Want us or not. Here. And he's just, please subscribe, because then
you yeah, will just show up in your feed. Yeah. That's like when Lou Miller invited me to go to his church, and he said it was the worst church in the convention.
Well, it was.
Don't do that.
All right. This is a pretty good podcast. It's not the best podcast in the world, but thank the Lord it ain't the worst either, because I've heard some of your podcasts out there. All right, so you join us next time.
Besides some of those sermons that are one star, two star.
That's true. That's true. All right, man. See y'all next week.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor, or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.